we're on page 169-170, chapter 37. In chapter 37, at the beginning, he said that the whole purpose of all of the way of getting to Tchiyas HaMeisim is dependent upon what we do now. And what we are doing now is we are taking things which are under the rulership of Klipa, the forces of evil, specifically Klipas Noga, and we're utilizing them and then elevating them up, because we said that things which are, for example, which are totally prohibited, like he gave the example of Orla, are, for an Estro, cannot be used because the Chayas in them cannot be elevated to holiness. And then he said, likewise, the last thing he said at the end, the last time we did last time, was that it's likewise true with our animal soul and our bodies, that they are also, because we're using them to engage in the mitzvah, and even if we're just talking, we're doing a talking mitzvah like benching or shema, one of those, so we're utilizing the vitality from our animal vitalizing soul and elevating that to holiness as well. Zeis Eid Acheris, we're at the bottom of the page over there, furthermore in English. Furthermore, Shekayach Nefesh HaYunis HaMislabeshes Bo'isiyas HaDibra B'Talmud Torah B'Tfilah Kiyaitzeh B'Hamay B'Mitzvos Ma'isiyas. This vitality, the animal soul, which is enclosed in the articulation of speech, when he's learning Torah or davening or whatever, or when the person is doing some sort of physical action of a mitzvah, harikol gidulei v'chayosim ahadam shehu meklipas noga mamish, so then all of the growth and the life which is in the blood, which comes from the blood, which the blood itself comes from klipas noga, I'll explain this in a second, shehen kol eichlin umashkin v'sha'achal v'sha, so that's all the food and drink that a person eats. So it says we know the shtia v'nasadam shehoye tachas v'mshol z'inikos chayos v'menu, that when a person eats, what happens to the food? Goes right to our waistline, yes. Exactly. Okay, some of us more than others. So, what is that? It says, Nasa Dam Basar Kim Sarai. Yes. Because that's what you want it to do. The whole reason why are we eating is if you don't eat, what's going to happen is you're going to die. Because your body needs the energy derived from the food. So the food that we're eating, all the things which are kosher, fit into the category, we said last week, fit into the category of klipas noga, which is the elevatable aspect of klipa. We call that mundane. Okay, we're not allowed to have anything profane, but we are allowed to engage in the mundane. And our purpose in being here, we specifically were supposed to elevate the mundane to the holy. That's our job. That's what we're here for. So now, what is our blood made of? Well, blood is directly affected by the things that we eat. And fat, for sure. Okay, the more you eat, the fatter you get. Yes, so we know. Okay. So, but the components of the blood also. I'm not going to go into the physiology of this. This is not a medical course per se. But if a person wants healthy blood, then they have to have healthy food. If a person is going to eat things in which are junk, so their blood is going to be lacking as well. They'll be missing in iron and other essential nutrients, etc., etc., and anemia and all kinds of other anemias that are the result of not consuming the right foods. Okay, so now, so the blood is what's carrying the oxygen to the brain, and also carrying, more important than that, the blood sugar to the brain, so that the brain can function, and the brain can tell you what to do. So when a person is engaged in some sort of a mitzvah, well, it took this oxygenated blood that's going throughout the person's body to get the person's body to move in that specific way. So then what happens is when a person does the mitzvah, is they're elevating not only the thing that they're using, like the example of the parchments of the tefillin and the esrog and the tzedakah, but they're also elevating all the things that they ate to be able to do that mitzvah. Does that make sense? Yeah? You can say no, I can say it again. Yeah? Make sense? Yeah? Okay.
And
And now what happens is that the mundane, because he's using this vitality for the purpose of doing a mitzvah, so the energy that he's deriving, the calories that this person is getting from the food, causes the food to also be elevated. So that would be one of the intentions. Why does a person eat? So a person could be thinking, I'm eating so that I have the strength to do this mitzvah. That's called eating l'shem shemayim. Okay, there's a story, I haven't told this story in years, but it just popped into my head, so anything that just pops into my head must be Hashgacha Pratis, right? And it would be Hashgacha Pratis if I didn't tell it too, right? So so anyway, is there was, I don't know what time period this story happened, but somebody asked some Rebbe, that's all I can get you, as far as I don't remember which Rebbe it was, Rebbe, Chassid X, Rebbe fill in the blank, okay, said, I don't understand, how are you supposed to eat L'shem Shemayim? So he said, I'm not so good at explaining this, I want you to go and to visit this person in this town. Okay, so he goes to this town, he finds out where this person lives, he knocks on the door. To say that the person living in this house was corpulent would be an understatement. This guy was massive. Okay, and he said, Rebbe so-and-so sent me to see you. He said, oh, my Rebbe, please come in. Okay, so he sees him, he invites him for lunch. For lunch, this guy sits down and has what would be a Sudosh Shloima Vishaita, so where Shloima Melech slaughtered 20,000 sheep for lunch. This would be an understatement, what this guy consumed for lunch. So after lunch, he's watching this guy just like consuming this food. Just like this guy was just like totally involved with consuming food. And he's just like totally perplexed. And he says, afterwards, he says, oh, the Rebbe sent you, so what did the Rebbe send you for? And he said, I wanted to learn how to eat L'shem Shemayim, for the sake of heaven. He says, it behooves me. He said, let me tell you something. He says, you're probably wondering what I'm doing. I'd be a chassid and be so obese. He says, let me tell you, there was a while ago, many decades ago, there was a pogrom. And they chopped my father. And my father was a little skinny pickle. And they tied him to a stake and they torched him and he died instantly. Me, when they're going to come for me and they're going to tie me to a stake, it's not such a pleasant story, I'm going to spit and sizzle and crackle and it's going to take them a long time to get me. Okay? I told you it wasn't as pleasant as the stories. This is not one of those happy ending stories. Sorry. So, but here this is determined as being L'shem Shemayim. Usually we think L'shem Shemayim as being, as he says over here, I'm eating in order to be able to have the strength to go do a mitzvah. So here you can say this guy had the strength. He wanted to have the strength to be able to die Kal Kiddush Hashem properly. Okay, so as what happens now is that the evil is turned to good from the power of his vitalizing soul, which is growing because of the food that he's eating. And this chayas that the person is derived from this food that he's eating is now enclosed in the performance of the action or the saying of the letters of the Torah or the davening that the person's doing. And what are these mitzvahs? He said before and he's going to say it again. I don't know, maybe a half a dozen times before we get to the end of the book. That what are the mitzvahs and what's the Torah? The Torah is the inner will of Hashem. And so just as it is that when a person takes some physical object and turns it into an item for doing a mitzvah, it loses its status as that item and becomes a holy thing. Yeah, till this day, I was just talking to somebody not too long ago. There's this guy, they're already picking his rogan, you know, to get him shipped and to get him through customs. So they already started picking esrogim. Okay? So they go to a place, the Lubavitchers get theirs in Calabria, Italy. And he says the locals there just think that these Jews are absolutely out of their minds. That they're paying $12 for a piece of fruit. When these guys come, they get like, you remember the old coffee commercials with Alexa Hente over here, coming over here. That's before, way before your time, sorry, you're too young. So they get the royal treatment because they can't fathom why would anybody pay that kind of money for something that shouldn't cost more than half a euro. And this guy is willing to pay, and he has to look through them all. He doesn't understand what is he looking for. He looks at every tree and every bush and every one, and they hand pick them. And it says they humor the Italians humor these rabbis that come, but they think they're crazy. But listen, if you know, guilt is guilt. If they're going to pay that kind of money for it, let him be crazy. You know, his guilt is green, or whatever color euros are. So, but what happens is there's a big difference between that citrone that you buy in Naples on an October morning for 50 cents and the esrog that you're going to be shaking on the first day of Sukkot. Because the citron's a citron, and the only thing you really do with it is use it for making a candle or something, whatever, you know, some kind of bug spray or something. And this esrog is a total, completely different metzius altogether. This is something that you can say and take a bracha, you can make a bracha on it. So you could already ask, wait a minute, why can't I go into a market in Genoa, and I'll pick up an esrog the day before Sukkot, and I'll use that. And it'll pay 50 cents for it. And the answer is you can't. Because 70 to 80% of the esrogim that are grown in Italy are grown on lemon trees. And it can't be an esrog grown on a lemon tree. It can't be grafted. Yeah, they graft it on. Because that way there's a certain... Because the esrog trees are very perishable. An esrog tree will only last about 4, 5, 5 or 6 years. 7 years. And then it dies. Yeah, I got a whole lesson when I went to Israel, went to Kfar Chabad. Yeah, the first 3 years you can't use them because it's Orla. And the fourth year, the stuff has to go to Yerushalayim. So you get to the fifth, sixth, seventh, maybe an eighth year, and then that's it. That's all you get out of it. But they're constantly growing new ones, so it's like, you know.
Wow, how do you do it?
So anyway, so you can't use the esrog that you...
So there's nothing like, there's nothing as thing as a 50 foot tall esrog?
No. Not in Israel, anyway. But you want them to grow proper so they can make proper citronella candles out of them, so they're grown on lemon trees, because lemon trees will last forever. And this to why, what's the difference is because this esrog is an expression of the inner aspect of Hashem's will. And anytime a person uses something which is in the performance of a mitzvah, they are connecting themselves, what part? Their body, their animal soul, the life, everything that they ate that morning to get them that far is all incorporated in the will and wisdom of Hashem. Okay, and how far back do you want to go? Okay, we could include the shoes, we'll include the car that got him to shul, whatever it is that has to do, whatever is used in the performance of the mitzvah, all of it gets incorporated into the will of Hashem. We'll take it back even further. The job to be able to buy the car, to buy the shoes, to buy the mitzvah. So, you know, so whatever it is, however much every person is doing it, provided that they're having like the end result is there, that I'm doing this in order to be able to fulfill the inner will of Hashem. So all of that, the entire persona of the person is now L'shem Shemayim. B'lishum Hester Panim, and he says without any concealment whatsoever.
Shouldn't it belittle it just to call it a ritual?
I'm not sure what the word ritual, it's an excellent question, but I'm not sure exactly the nuance of the word ritual. If you want to say ritual is a translation of the word mitzvah, then I'm fine with it. So, because the word mitzvah is really a good translation, I'm not sure the etymology of the word ritual, because the word mitzvah means a connection to God. That's what the word mitzvah means.
Okay. The ritual is actual physical
doing the thing. Okay. You want to say there's a negative connotation to the word ritual? It's only ritual. It's like that's the way, yeah. That's what you want to say?
Maybe not.
So it's more than just a precept, yes, a nice thing to do. Yes, if that's what you're asking. Or even a religious thing to do. Okay? Because now it happens, he says, Belishum Hester Panim, without any concealment of Hashem's revelation whatsoever. So that means that the whole entire process that got that person to doing that mitzvah, however much was entailed, going back to Bereshis Bara with this person, there's no concealment of Hashem's will from that person. That person might not notice it, might not see it. But we said last week, I said the week before, that just because you didn't see the revelation doesn't mean the revelation doesn't exist. And their vitality is also incorporated in the light of the infiniteness, blessed be he, shehu yitzoni yisbarach, that this is the will of Hashem. Okay, the whole process becomes incorporated in the infiniteness of Hashem. So what happens now is that the whole entire, what did it take? We're talking about so this person's shaking an asterisk, for example. Okay, so it's going to entail so much to get that esrog into your hand. Okay, you got to get the rabbi to go over to Italy to go get it. Okay, which entails an airplane. And someplace they had to make this airplane. And all the fuel. Okay, that's one way of purifying the Arab world, I suppose. With all the stewards and all the stuff on it that's made in China. Okay, and then all the things that person had to do to be able to afford that esrog, okay, with entailing going to work and eating and et cetera, et cetera, all of it becomes now the facilitators for that person being able, a short day of Sukkot morning, to be able to shake that esrog. So that whole entire process now becomes incorporated in the infiniteness of Hashem. And the whole entire process, you know, what I said before jokingly, going back to Bereshis Bara, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, because somebody had to be able, this is, we're elevating the Wright brothers, we're elevating Jean-Paul Getty with his oil thing over there, and elevating, I don't know who invented steel, the steel processing, stainless steel, how far back that goes. All the whole thing, the whole system, it's a vertical progression, starting with the guy who decided that they're going to mine ore 4,000 years ago. The whole process is elevated so that this person can shake that esrog, for example. And of course, what's going to be incorporated into this infiniteness of Hashem is going to be the person, the highest, the life of the person's own animal soul. And that's for sure, since it is, that's going to be direct. Since it is, what's shaking that esrog is the hand that's holding the esrog, and then the soul which is in that hand, which is causing those muscles to contract, are for sure directly involved with the performance of the mitzvah, and therefore is directly incorporated in the infiniteness of Hashem. A person doesn't see it, doesn't matter. It's happening.
So the tree makes sound in the forest whether I hear it or not.
Exactly. You hear this? And through this now, the whole category of klipas noga, the elevatable levels of evil, are elevated with one shake. Because when you think about it, what has to really happen in order for this person to be holding an esrog? You had to have a creation going back to before Bereshis Bara. So the whole process of getting that esrog, 5,700 plus years, and plus whatever was going on before creation, is now realized when that person does that mitzvah. That this clip is no good. That's the highest. That's the life that's going into this world.
Kol nefesh pratis kol teriyak mitzvah zateir.
And that when it is, for example, that you have each and every single Jew, which every soul is divided into 600,000 parts, and it fulfills, which causes each individual soul to exist. And they're doing each of the 613 commandments of the Torah. Shasa loisa seili far, shasa gidim, lahafi shasa gidim shal dam and nefesh hachayuni shibaguf. That, for example, when actively engaging in not performing some sort of transgression, that then the person is separating the 365 veins, sinews, and organs which carry the blood of the animal soul that's in the body. So that the person no longer receives any type of vitality from doing an avera, ma'achas mesholish klipas atameus legamri, from something that's totally evil. So what happens now is the person has refraining from doing something wrong. Okay, we talked before now about doing something right, and the whole process of creation is elevated. What happens now? The person's not doing something wrong. So what happens is that they are cutting off any type of life which is going to the forces of evil. There is a discussion, are we talking about, does a person have to be actively not doing something or passively not doing it? Right now, none of us is killing anybody.
That's a good idea.
Okay. So I'm immediately reminded of a joke my older sister, who was my, she should live well and be happy, but you know, the line is your face hurt. That was the one I heard. You probably know that one, right? You know that joke? Yeah. Does your older face hurt? No, well, it's killing me, you know. So so we're not killing anybody right now. So are we therefore separated from the commandment or the prohibition of killing somebody? In which case we would be actively engaged in lowering the chayas in the world into the realm of klippa? Well, according to one opinion, yeah. I like that opinion. Okay, right now we are not doing 365 things wrong, and all of their branches and offshoots. Go for it. But there is the other opinion that says, it's only when you have the opportunity to do the thing wrong, and you hold back from doing it, as the Gemara says, shav loitase ki'ilo asa, a person who sits passively wanting to do something wrong and doesn't do it is credited as having performed the mitzvah, because they did do something, they controlled themselves. Okay, but we talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, who is it that decides what averas you don't get to do? It's Hashem. Because right now, we can't eat any pork right now because there's no pork in front of us. So even if I wanted to eat a piece of pork right now, which I don't, I can't, because Hashem didn't make sure to see to it that there should be a piece of pork for me not to eat. So it's up to Hashem to decide which averas I'm not going to do. Only those mitzvahs which Hashem is affording me the opportunity not to do, then I cannot do them. Okay, I know that sounds like double talk, right? But that's sort of the way it is. That from the Sholosh Klipas HaTameis, you have all of these 365 prohibitions from the Torah and all of their ashes coming, Shehem and the Rabbanim, which come from the Rabbanim. Okay, we'll take again. Answer the question again.
If there's a dependence on material advancement on Kedusha, or even with no Kedusha, whether there could still be material advancement?
Probably not. If it would be, I'm basing it, it says that there's a famous medrash that Hashem went around to all the nations of the world before the giving of the Torah and said, do you want the Torah? And they all said no. And then the last one that Hashem asked was the Jewish people, and Hashem was resolved that if the Jewish people were going to say no, that he would cease creating the world until it turn it back to the null and void from whence it came, because there would be no purpose in creating a world if people weren't doing Torah and mitzvahs. So the advancement of the world and actually keeping the world going is dependent upon Jews engaged in Torah and mitzvahs. and it's only just up to, I would say probably to right before World War II, the larger cities in Europe had these chaburas of people who would stay up at night and learn Torah with the express purpose that there should never be a time when there would be no people learning Torah in the world. Okay, so people used to stay up. You know, they would have people that would do this. Yeah, you had it all over Europe, you know, with that in mind. Now you don't have to worry about such things because when we're going to sleep over here, they're waking up in Australia, et cetera. So there is never a time where there's not somebody in some time zone that's not learning Torah right now, keeping the world going.
But he's not coming to explain the interdependence and how that works.
The technique? Well, the Alter Rebbe just said that when a person does a mitzvah, so they are elevating the entire realm of Klipas Noga, of this elevatable, mundane realm. So it means that the person has to be actively engaged in utilizing the mundane world for the purpose of doing a mitzvah.
But the koya could come from just the klipa noga for the...
Go ahead, finish your question.
So you got airplanes and technological advancements.
Correct.
If the koya doesn't come from Kedusha, it could sustain itself off of the klipa noga.
Well, it would think how many airplanes are flying not for the purpose of doing some mitzvah. You would think. But the whole category of airplane only exists to facilitate Jews doing mitzvahs. The fact that there are hundreds of thousands of people who fly every single day, not for the purpose of doing a mitzvah, is irrelevant.
It's maintained for the sake of the one
who
is doing the mitzvah.
Because it would be that people would fly only to do the purpose of doing a mitzvah, then there would be no airlines because it wouldn't be cost effective for them to go through all this process of making all these airplanes and sustaining them and employing all these people for the bunch of people who have an occasion have to go fly to do a mitzvah. So you need to have that whole entire support system, the whole infrastructure of the entire physical creation has to be there in order for Jews to take part in it, in elevating it.
The fact that there's billions of stars existing in the whole universe is for the sake of the fact there's Yidden here on this planet.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, in the grand schemes, it doesn't seem like we need a billion stars. Maybe we decided we did.
Yeah.
It's the same issue.
You're probably right, yeah.
Same issue.
Yeah, you answer the question?
I guess so.
Okay. You with us?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Okay, now. Shuv, and furthermore, last word line is Shuv, right? A little bit above the halfway part of the page. Veshum losechol nefesh chayonis la'alos el Hashem im nitma betuma sholosh klipas atameis. And furthermore, the vitality and the animal soul would not be able to elevate it from the impurity of the three total complete realms of klipa, because they never get elevated. That's not what their thing is. Their thing is not to be elevated. He says kim bittel. Vavara Ligamri, we asked this question last week. How is it that we fix up the things which are totally unelevatable, the profane? We can't do anything. We avoid them. And what's going to be the final result with them? That the spirit of impurity is going to be wiped away from the world. So there's a discussion, is it that, you know, we say that a pig in Hebrew is called a chazir, coming from the word chazir, chazar, to come back. And it says in the Messianic era, so a pig will come back, it'll be a kosher animal. That's why it's called a chazir. Okay, there's a problem though, is that at the time when pig becomes kosher, because avaru hatum min haaretz, the spirit of impurity will move from the world, we're going to derive our nurture directly from God, and we're not going to need to eat anything. So So if it's kosher already, who cares? I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah.
So will pigs exist? We'll see.
We can get back into dramatic paradoxes. So Hashem wants a deer with octoinum.
Yes.
There's these klipa noigo, which...
that provides the vehicle for making a deer with octoinum, for making a dwelling for God, yes.
Hashem echad, klipa noigo also has to be part of Hashem.
Of course. Evil is not... We're not into panteism or dualism.
But we say...
God created evil, sure,
I
absolutely.
I say klipa noigo, the klipa timaeus.
Yeah, God created evil as well.
We say deer, Hashem wanted deer tachtonim. It means
yes.
Like,
and how do we make a deer tachtonim now?
Doesn't
by
mean the lowest level. It means the level above the klipos demands.
I want to say you want to say that I want. What do I want to do? Is I want to put myself so much in the schmutz that that's where I should make a deer tachtonim.
We say tachtonim means the level.
How tachton do you want to go? You want to make it such that I can utilize total impurity. That's what you would like to say, okay? When I was a bucher in Seattle.
Wait, I mean,
well, that's what you want to say, right?
No, yeah. So what is your type to tachton?
How tachton do you want tachton to be? How low do you want it to go? So when I was a bucher in Seattle, the students on Friday night would, since, you know, in the wintertime especially, because in Seattle in the wintertime, candlelighting time was like before 4 o'clock. And so there was a long Friday night. So they'd sit and they'd discuss various what-if scenarios. Okay, so one of the scenarios that came up, what would you do if you found out that for some reason or somehow your mother wasn't Jewish? I think we may have discussed this in the past. Okay, what would you do? Would you convert? And it was actually, the demography of the answer was quite interesting because there were 10 lifers and 4 BTs. And all of the lifers said we wouldn't, and all the BTs said we would. So now, which I thought was very interesting. But one of the guys said, of course I would not, because like this, what would I do? I would go into bars, and I'd go into ashrams, and I would, some places where I can't go now, and I would find Jews over there, and I would tell them, you don't belong over here, you belong in, go, you know, become, get involved with Jew. That was his, he was...
he said, I go into ashrams and bars anyways.
He would use his, his not being Jewish to L'shem Shemayim. Okay, so that was cute, you know, so. But no, because the... when we say that Hashem wants a dwelling below, it's on Hashem's terms. Hashem was the one who set up the parameters. This is the way I want it done. And part of it, and a very big part of it, is this stuff over here is muck, and I don't want you getting involved with it.
It's ultimately, and Hashem will raise it. It's beyond our ability.
Ultimately, it will be raised by Hashem. But right now, it's here, so that, as I said before, we can refrain from getting involved with it. And that brings in an infinite amount of godliness as well. And like I was going to say later on, I don't know exactly which chapter it is, that when you do a mitzvah, you're only doing a mitzvah for a certain specific period of time. Your Shabbos candle is burning for so long. You have your tefillin on for so long. So that means that you did the mitzvah for that amount of time. As soon as you stop doing the mitzvah, you're no longer getting credit for doing the mitzvah. As soon as you put the esrog down, you're not shaking the esrog anymore. So you get a very limited amount of godliness being introduced to the world that fits according to how much effort you put in. When a person, for say, let's say, has an opportunity, yeah, when a person has an opportunity to do something wrong, it's staring at them right in the face, and they don't do it, how much are they not doing it?
The entire time where that is tempting.
You say more than the person who has no opportunity to do it even if they wanted to.
It's
like the BD who whose brother goes to a bar and could go pretty easily compared to the guy who's never.
It's
been
a he's doing it an infinite amount of time, because as soon as the person says, "I'm not doing it,"
right.
How big is zero? Zero is infinite in this instance. So what you're actually doing by not doing something is you're instilling a greater level of godliness into the world than a person who does something. Because does is measured. Not doing is not measured. So the only reason now we could say that Hashem created Shalosh Klipot HaTameh is a total unclean klipa is for us to stay away from it, to make that choice not to use it.
But does that work? Because earlier we brought up the scenario. Right now we can't, I mean, we could say we're not eating pork, but there's no opportunity to not eat the pork in front of us.
Correct. So, but let's say that according to that opinion that says you don't have to have the opportunity.
Okay,
just,
in that case,
we're doing it infinitely.
Then all of us are doing it,
Correct. All 365, infinitely so.
Infinitely
yes.
So, constantly anyway.
Correct. I'm fine with that.
Okay, fair enough.
If you want to tell me that I'm bringing down 365 levels of infinite godliness into the world right now, I'm going for it.
I would like to hold by your opinion.
Okay.
Or the opinion that you're holding by.
Okay. V'esuvatim avim min ha'aretz v'remach mitzvus aseh lahamshich or ein seif baruch hu lamata, by doing performing the 248 positive commandments to draw down the infiniteness of Hashem down here below. Now we just said it's measured. Okay, but when you're talking, when the measured amount of godliness that a person is drawing down into the physical world whenever they do a mitzvah, what quality does it have? Qualitatively speaking, what type of godliness would you say it is? There's only one type of godliness. It's godliness. It's infinite. So even though this person is only shaking the lula for a couple of seconds,
right,
for those couple of seconds that they're doing this mitzvah, and that's all they get the credit for, just for the couple of seconds,
right,
they're bringing down an infinite amount of godliness into the world.
Right.
So every mitzvah taps into the infiniteness of Hashem. The result, the mitzvah may take a minute, the result is eternal.
Is there a difference in quality of mitzvahs?
No. So it says you can't measure which one's a lighter mitzvah, which is a more important mitzvah. No.
Sorry. Let me rephrase it. Is there a difference in quality of performance?
Kavana.
Maybe not kavana. Just a quality of performance. Here's a thought. We were discussing the pork.
Mm-hmm.
The guy sitting in front of, sitting with his buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
At the job, and he forgot his lunch, and his buddy offers him a BLT.
Yeah.
And he's really got to sit there and say, no, I don't want it. And when he really, it wells up in him and he really wants it, that can't be, I'm not sure that that's comparable to us sitting here saying, no, we don't want to be out there.
I would agree. Because there he says he's giving already, so you might be thinking about, well, however long he's tempted by it, so,
yeah.
Because it's that says it's considered as though he did something.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask, is there a difference if, say, it was just a hamburger or a cordon bleu, maybe, I'm not eating a cordon bleu, sorry. It's a better quality of Avera, so.
Yeah. So I have to wonder if there's some, seems like there's some difference here.
Yeah, there is.
Which is there a difference when the Rebbe takes his Esrog and some, Paltru his first time
no.
ever shook
no.
in his life does
no.
it. And,
no, no, I'm going to say not. As far as the actual performance, the way I learned it is that Moshe Rabbeinu and I are doing the mitzvah the same.
Right.
Is it that he's able to facilitate things with his kavanas that I can't?
There you go. That's that's a different issue.
Okay, and he's going to talk about later that the body of the mitzvah is the performance, the kavanah is the neshama. He talks about this at great length in the 40s. So as far as the actual performance of the mitzvah, whatever mitzvah Moshe did, I do too. And they're the same. Okay? Okay, want some water? That what happens now is that there's elevated and it is and connects and united with him his general vitalizing soul. which is enclosed in his body, and his body is comprised of 248 limbs, and there is a total and absolute unity, liyes le'achadim mamish, to be totally one thing. So when a person's doing a mitzvah, it's not like you're pasting God onto yourself. It's not like you're tying yourself to God. You're becoming one thing. To such an extent, we talked, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago or something, what does the word yachid mean? Is that you're not there anymore. It's just Hashem. Okay, you didn't feel it. That's tough on you, you didn't feel it. But it's there. You lose your existence as who you are, as a separate individual human being. When you're doing a mitzvah, you're becoming incorporated in the infiniteness of Hashem. It's not you anymore, sorry. As David said, because this is the way in which Hashem wanted there to be a dwelling place down here below. And then what happens at that point, the person now becomes the vehicle, like the patriarchs, for bringing this dwelling place down here to be just proper for Hashem. So we are facilitating the purpose of creation every time we do a mitzvah. And since it is that his animal vitalizing soul, generally and among the Jews, become now a vehicle for the holiness of Hashem, so then what happens is the general life that's in this world, the world goes out of its state of impurity, the halas of it and its weakness, but sa'ala l'kedushin, it rises to holiness, liyais merkava l'Hashem, to be also a vehicle for Hashem. The whole entire spectrum of creation now becomes a vehicle for conveying the infiniteness of Hashem, behis galas kevaydi, revealing his glory, which his glory is translated as the expression of the divine presence, which we are able to appreciate somehow. Because whether a person is aware of it or not, when a person does a mitzvah, it does have a physical effect on them. How can I prove it? I can't prove it. But it has to be that if this person is losing their existence, even though they don't think they're losing their existence, but if this person is losing their existence, it has to have a very positive effect on their physical body as well. So that every mitzvah that a person does is going to make that part of their body so much better. We talked about before that this 248 commandments correspond to the 248 body parts. And so each mitzvah has its body parts, even though I've never seen a list of which mitzvahs correspond to which body part. I've said this here before, and if you listen through the tapes over here, you could say, I've often said, I want to know which mitzvah I'm doing with my spleen. Just to know, I mean, whether I'm doing it or not, but, you know, so my spleen is one of my 248 body parts, so I want to know what mitzvah goes with the spleen. I mean, some of them are easy. You give tzedakah with your hand, and you put tefillin on your arm, and, you know, you walk to shul. I mean, all these things. What am I doing with my spleen? So, like I say, so this person then becomes a... they become affected by it. Such that there's a story from the Baal Shem Tov. A woman comes to the Baal Shem Tov, she's from like two towns over. Rebbe, my husband is sick, he's dying, they tell him to get to Chevra Kedisha, please can you come help? So the Baal Shem Tov travels over the two towns, and he sees this guy, and he says, if you don't mind, I'd like to be alone. Okay, there's a doctor with them, and so everybody goes out, and he comes out a short while later, and he says, could you get me some beef broth? So the doctor says, beef broth? This man's ready for a Chevra Kedisha. What do you think, beef broth? He said, if you don't mind. So they brought him the beef broth, and the Baal Shem Tov took a teaspoon of it and stuck it onto the guy's lips, And with the first teaspoon, his pallor changed from like gray and ashen to already a little bit pink. And by the time that he finished the bowl of soup, the man was sitting up in bed already and he was awake. He says, your husband's okay. So he says, the doctor's walking him out and says, listen, I know what that guy had. And the cure for what that guy had was not beef consomme. So the doctor says, the Baal Shem Tov said,
even the good stuff.
The doctor said, you're right. The Baal Shem Tov said, you're right. Because this is the difference between you and me. You're looking just at his body and the effects of the body. The body is only just the symptoms. It says, I took a look at this guy's neshama and saw that he was lacking in the performance of the mitzvahs, and the vitality which is channeled through doing the mitzvahs wasn't going into the proper body parts, and therefore the proper body parts weren't functioning properly, and that's why the guy got sick. But once I was able to talk to the neshama and convince that he should do tshuva, the tshuva already opens up all of the portals already, and convince him that he has to do the mitzvahs, so now he could get better. Why the beef consomme? Because he hadn't eaten for such a long time, he needed something to start. I mean, you know, so. V'ra kol basar yachtav, it says all flesh will see, v'yofi alehen behadar gain uzay, and all more kinds of more expressions, and we'll see the greatness of his grandeur, v'yamalik v'yad ha'arez is kol ha'arez, and that the earth will be filled with Hashem's glory, v'yisrael yara ba'ayin ba'ayin, k'matan teira, we'll see Hashem like we did at Matan Teira. Dixiv ata ha'arez l'adaski, Hashem hu alakin, ein oid melvade. As it says, you are shown to know this day that Hashem is God and there's nothing else besides Him. He's going to talk about this pasuk at great length in Shari Yechud V'Muna, and I'm not going to write here right now. And through this now, all of the impurities of the world become swallowed and nullified. Because their nurture and their vitality comes from holiness. When a person who has the ability of elevating the mundane to the holy engages in the profane, he's taking all that chayas that he has behind him, that whole Seder Yisrael, the whole creation, and is detaching it from holiness and sticking it into the profane. Okay, I'm looking for a good place to stop. Now it's through the intermediary of the mundane. That's where I'm going to stop. Okay, so the intermediary of the mundane, that's how the forces of evil get a grasp on us. Because, let's say a person doesn't eat pork. This person is very careful with his kashrus. But he eats like a pig. So what happens now, the vitality which could have been elevated to holiness now sinks down into the profane. He's not engaged in serving Hashem, he's engaged in providing vitality to the forces of evil. Yeah, that's even without getting involved with it. We're not talking about eating pig. You could eat cow like a pig, it'll have the same effect. To be continued.